go ahead and flip to page 2, Rules of Thumb and Other Things to Remember. And as promised, 16 important things that we've talked about, that we've discussed, that were just woven throughout the training and just kind of overarching principles of the things that we've talked through. And again, please plan on discussing this in your groups with your facilitator. This is a part of this final week. It's just kind of diving into these last little reminders so that you can feel really empowered and bolstered so that you're ready to continue with what you've learned, even though you won't be meeting with us anymore on a specific weekly basis. Obviously, we want to do some check-ins with you, but it won't be at a scheduled weekly time anymore. So let's look through these 16 other things to remember. So number one, reflective responses help children to feel understood and can lessen anger. That is crucial. That is why reflecting feelings is the very first skill. That's why it influences so many of the rest. Because when kids feel understood, there is an automatic diffusion of the intensity of the feeling and the need. So if they're angry and you reflect their feeling, it lessens it because they feel that they've been validated and heard. That's very powerful, and there's really no skill that can do that like reflecting feeling can. Number two, through their play, children express what their lives are like right now. So often you'll get a snapshot of exactly where they are, what their needs are, so what they need out of things, and how they wish things could be. And the very fascinating thing about kids playing is they're able to rewrite their story, they're able to change their narrative, they're able to attain ideal self versus actual self status, they're able to work toward what they wish, what they need, where they need to grow. So kids play out where they are, where they want to go, who they want to become, what they are desiring, needing, wishing, wanting. And all we have to do is be attuned to it and be aware of it and recognize that we can glean so much about them from being a part of their play. And that's what you've discovered in these last 7 sessions with your kids. You have started the process of saying, yes, I get it. I can see that. I know what that means now. I get thematically where that's going. And that's that introduction to entering into a child's play and learning more about them. It's their language. So we can actually speak their language more effectively now, and that's really exciting. Number three, remember that you are not the source of answers, specifically in the playtime. So when your kids ask you questions, it's very helpful to say, I wonder. Or you get to decide, that's up to you, you're in charge. All of those returning the responsibility statements. Number four, do not ask questions you already know the answer to. My phrase for that is if you know enough to ask a question, you know enough to make a statement. So that's been a challenge. I know it is so hard not to ask questions, but you don't need to ask a question you already know the answer to. Your child tells you everything that you need to know through their nonverbal and their verbal. So when you have an idea of what it is, you can just say it in a statement. Number five, questions imply non-understanding. In other words, if you ask a child a question, the implication is, I don't know. Are you upset? I'm not sure. Did that scare you? I'm confused. Why did you do that? I'm trying to gain information. But questions put children in their minds and kids live in their hearts. And we never want them to have an internal war that's being waged between I'm down here in my emotions, you're trying to pull me up here into my brain, and now I have this big gap that I have to try to bridge. So that actually parallels with number four, because we don't need to ask questions we already know the answer to, and they imply that we don't understand, and we don't want our kids to have to be up in their brains because they're not cognitive beings. So number six, what's important is not what the child knows, but what the child believes. And I actually have not shared this with you because this always ties into this number six in week 10. We had a very good friend once who we worked on staff with him for youth. And I say we, my husband and I, we were on youth staff with him, and we had 6th through 12th graders that we supported through this position that we were in. And he said to us once, you know, when you think, and this was specifically about teenagers, but this is true of humans in general. He said, when you think through the process of a child being told something, so mom and dad tell that teen that they love them every day, but they can know it and not believe it. And those are two very different things. Because the child can say, yeah, I know my mom and dad love me, but I don't feel that they love me. I don't believe that they love me. And that has stuck with me. That was, oh my gosh, in 99, I think. And that has stuck with me all this time because I always am cognizant of that. What does the child believe? Because again, they live in their hearts, right? Your belief and your feelings and what you understand to be true are emotional roots. When the child knows something, that's cognitive, that's up in their brain. And there's often a very, very big disconnect between those two for kids. So it's very important to recognize what the child believes, not necessarily what the child knows. Okay, number seven, when you focus on the problem, you lose sight of the child. And that ties into rule of thumb number one, focus on the donut, not the hole. So the problem is never where the focus should be. The problem is a byproduct of what is missing. The problem is not the problem. The problem is the byproduct. So you lose sight of the child if that's all you see. And this training is so effective in helping you see there's so much more to the relationship, and the relationship is at the center of fixing everything. So the byproduct of a healthy relationship is less behavior problems. So we don't ever have to focus on the problem, we have to focus on the relationship. And number eight, support the child's feeling, intent, or need, even if you can't support the behavior. So when we went back to limit setting, remember one of the things that we talked about was your feelings are always valid, but sometimes your behavior is not appropriate. So I will always hear and understand and care about your feeling, your intent, your need, your wish, your desire, your emotion. But sometimes I just can't agree with the behavior, and sometimes the behavior will require a limit. But a child is never wrong for feeling anything. So that's very important. Number nine, noticing the child is a powerful builder of self-esteem. Just noticing somebody makes someone feel better about themselves. And actually, along the same era when my husband and I were on youth staff, we took several trips to the largest homeless shelter in the Southeast United States. It was in Georgia, Southern Georgia, and it was at Peachtree and Pine. And I don't know if you've ever been in the Atlanta area, but Peachtree and Pine is about as rough as it gets. And it was the largest homeless shelter. It was one of the few that did not require identification. So you literally got the worst of the worst, because if they were ex-inmates, if they had records, if they had no documentation, if they were illegal, if they were whatever, that they didn't want to be found, they were able to come to this particular homeless shelter. So I tell you that because I want you to understand the gravity of the kind of, you know, people that were in the shelter. And we got a lot of training on how to interact with the homeless effectively. Just like you've had training on how to interact with your kids effectively, every population has different needs. They have different ways that work for them and ways that don't. And there are effective tools and there are ineffective tools. So we were trained pretty extensively on how to interact with the homeless and what to say and what to do and what not to say and what not to do, because there's kind of an unwritten code, and until you've been around that population, it's hard to know. So what we were told again and again and again is, these are the people who the rest of the world ignores. They don't look at them, they don't talk to them, they don't touch them, they avoid them, they cross the street to not have to be anywhere around them. They are literally ignored. It's almost like they're invisible. And we were challenged to notice them. And so we were told to physically touch them, like put a hand on their shoulder, shake their hand, because most of these homeless men and women had not had physical contact in months because people don't ever want to touch them. And so we were told to use their names. We were told to touch them in a gentle way. And it was all with the intention of helping them feel noticed. And, you know, it's really interesting. Once you know play therapy principles, once you've gone through CPRT, things like this, you will connect it with other lessons that you've learned in your life. Like with the other one, I said, you know, we had this friend that told us about, it's not about what the child knows, it's what they believe. That always harkens me back to this. When I think about noticing a child as a powerful builder of self-esteem, I always think back to my days at that homeless shelter. You start to see the undercurrent of respect and kindness and acceptance. And that's what this entire training has been about. It's about loving your kids, unconditionally accepting them, building the relationship that you want, noticing them, paying attention, investing in them, using the right skills and the effective methods to communicate. It's all about helping the child develop into the best version of themselves that they can be. So when we notice them, it automatically builds their self-esteem. They feel important. And there's no greater feeling in the world when you know that someone you love thinks that you're important. That's what we all want. So sometimes it's just a matter of noticing them. Number 10, empower them by giving them credit for decisions. So you decided, you chose, you know, you have a plan, all of those you statements that we've used ad nauseum on purpose. We want to make sure that they are empowered through those acknowledgments. You did it. You figured it out. You got it. You worked hard. Why? Because they are in charge. The responsibility was theirs. And there's ownership in that. And again, builder of self-confidence, self-esteem, self-worth. Number 11, one of the best things we can communicate to our children is that they are competent. Tell children they are capable. They will think they are capable. If you tell children enough times that they can't do something, sure enough, they can't. Here's another life story connection. I'm not doing this on purpose. This is just literally where my brain goes. Think back to the movie Pretty Woman. And I don't know, you know, if that's a movie you've seen. I think it's a classic, so I think most people have seen it. But think back to the moment where Julia Roberts and Richard Gere are laying there together, and she says to him, when people tell you so many times that you're worth nothing, you finally start to believe it. And that is what number 11 says in a nutshell. And I always think back to that scene in that movie because she was knocked down so many times and so many people told her she was nothing. And she said, eventually you just start to think that it's true. And so if we constantly tell our children the message, you are capable, you are competent, I have confidence in you, I trust you, I accept you, it's self-fulfilling prophecy. What you tell people, what you tell your kids, what you believe about them, they adopt it and they believe it as truth. Another term in our field is the Pygmalion effect. And if you have not heard of it, if you're not sure what it is, look it up. It's absolutely a fascinating study that was done. But the short version is, Pygmalion effect was studied in a classroom setting where a teacher told children that essentially you're the smartest kids in the class, half the class. Then she told the other half the class that they were not very smart. And then conversely, the teacher herself was told these are the really smart kids and these are the kids that really aren't smart at all. So they kind of measured it from both sides. And interestingly enough, what the teacher believed about the child is the way that she scored, and what the children believed about themselves is the way that they performed on tests. So, unbelievable that the messages we receive influence our outcomes. So, of course, we want our kids to know that they are capable and that they are able to do anything that they want. So, it's important that we communicate that to them. Number 12, encourage creativity and freedom. Always, 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 I don't use absolutes very often, but in this case, yes, always encourage creativity. Creativity is the backbone for the development of so many healthy outcomes in life. Their imagination, their creativity, their spontaneous things that they want to do, that is powerful. It is so healthy. It is so good for them. So encourage those things, and obviously freedom to do those things. However, with freedom comes responsibility. So when you have the freedom to be creative and do things, there are also responsibilities that are associated. And that's where that limit setting and choice giving skill applies there. All right, number 13, our favorite. We're about to institute a new and significant policy within the confines of this household. So big words, big sentence, get kids' attention, help them know what is going to follow this sentence will forever change your life. So if you have that phrase already, if you don't, figure it out. Sit down and say, okay, what's my phrase going to be? How am I going to communicate that every time I say this, what comes next is going to forever change the climate and the culture in our family? So I need something that's going to get their attention and make sure they're really aware and invested in the conversation. Okay, number 14, when we are flexible in our stance, we handle anger more easily. So remember the analogy of the stiff arm for football players. Okay, so if you are rigid, if you are inflexible, if you have a stance that just is staunch and doesn't want to move, both you and the child end up getting hurt. Flexibility and acceptance are the keys to making sure that you preserve the relationship. Because if we have our arms stiff as a board and say, this is where I am, I'm not budging, that is when either we or the children or both get hurt. So being flexible, being aware of accommodating and kind of ebbing and flowing with the development and with the changes that kids go through, that's really important. 15, when you are not sure of what to say or what to do, this is a really helpful question. What action or words will most preserve the relationship in this moment and or do the least amount of harm? So sometimes that means we literally just don't open our mouths. Sometimes that means we walk away. Sometimes that means we go into our room and shut the door for 5 minutes. Sometimes we go take a walk around the neighborhood. Sometimes we just flat out say, I need a moment to cool off so we can talk when I've calmed down a little bit. Always, always, absolute again, nothing at this moment is more important than my relationship with my child. So whatever I have to do to preserve the relationship, I'm going to choose to do that. So it's extremely important to keep that in mind, extremely important to be aware of that. And this applies to everybody in our lives. Be aware, this is not just for your kids. This is for your significant others, your spouses, your parents, your friends, your coworkers. It's important to say, I'm going to do whatever I can to preserve the relationship in this moment. And that varies at any given time, but if you have that in your head as the way you'll handle something, that's a very effective approach and method. And finally, 16, live in the moment. Today is enough. We never have to push our kids towards the future. So where you are right now is right where you're meant to be. We can live in the moment, celebrate the moment, enjoy the moment, even with ups and downs, even with the crazy that sometimes is being a parent. We can live in the moment because today is special. Today is something that we can cherish and appreciate, and we don't always have to be thinking about what's next. Okay, well, when we're able to do this, and when my child can finally work on this, and when we've addressed this problem, and when, you know, all of these things fall into place. It's helpful to have goals and to always be looking forward, but it's also very helpful to say right now is also important and significant. So there you go. Those are the 16 other things to remember. And I hope that you are encouraged by those. I hope that it's a recap that kind of encourages you, fires you up, kind of jogs some of those old things that we've talked about, and then you can go forward using these as you continue. So I will see you in the next video where we will go over homework and what comes next.